Tonight on Banfield, Uvalde, like Columbine, like Sandy Hook, a name now forever linked with horrific pain and searing grief, and all too familiar questions. Why would a teenager kill 19 children and two teachers at an elementary school? How was this even possible? And how long is this going to keep happening? The news is still breaking tonight, ahead on Banfield. Hello and welcome to Banfield. We expected to lead this program with politics tonight, primary elections in five more states, but that is going to have to wait. Everything is going to have to wait because of a story that no one wants to report, a story we hoped never to report, and surely you would hope never to hear ever again. But once again, it's happened. Once again, a young man with a gun has opened fire in a school, an elementary school. And tonight, 19 children and two teachers are dead. The attacker is also dead, killed by the police. This is the deadliest school massacre since 20 children were shot dead at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, back in 2012, 10 years ago. But today, it was Robb Elementary in tiny Uvalde, Texas, just west of San Antonio. The whole town could fit in the arena where the San Antonio Spurs play their home games. But tonight, Uvalde is shattered. And while we know from horrible experience, it will eventually heal. It will never again be whole. Once again, because a lone, deranged man with a gun has seen to that. The President of the United States and the First Lady, Jill Biden, gave a somber address from the White House tonight.
I'd hoped when I became president, I would not have to do this again. Another massacre, Uvalde, Texas, an elementary school, beautiful, innocent, second, third, fourth graders. And how many scores of little children who witness what happened, see their friends die as if they're on a battlefield, for God's sake. They'll live with it the rest of their lives. There's a lot we don't know yet, but there's a lot we do know. The parents who will never see their child again, never have them jump in bed and cuddle with them. Parents will never be the same. To lose a child is like having a piece of your soul ripped away. There's a hollowness in your chest. You feel like you're being sucked into it and never going to be able to get out, suffocating. As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done? The idea that an 18-year-old kid can walk into a gun store and buy two assault weapons is just wrong. What in God's name do you need an assault weapon for except to kill someone? Deer aren't running through the forest with Kevlar vests on, for God's sake. It's just sick. And the gun manufacturers have spent two decades aggressively marketing assault weapons, which make them the most and largest profit. For God's sake, we have to have the courage to stand up to the industry. Why are we willing to live with this carnage? Why do we keep letting this happen? Where in God's name is our backbone to have the courage to deal with it and stand up to the lobbies? It's time to turn this pain into action. For every parent, for every citizen in this country, we have to make it clear to every elected official in this country, it's time to act.
the President of the United States just a little over an hour ago in the White House addressing the nation with regard to what happened in Uvalde, Texas. I want to take you live now to the scene. That's where our Robert Sherman is standing by. He's been reporting on this story throughout the evening. I just heard you give the update, and every time you give an update, Robert, it just sends a chill, as it should, because it's no longer 18 children, it's 19 children. And my fear, Robert, is that you are going to continue doing these updates throughout the night and that that death toll will change. What more do we know tonight?
Those numbers still stand as of this hour. We just spoke with Texas DPS a few moments ago, and as of now, those numbers have not changed. But I mean, you think about it, Ashley, with how small of a community this is, 16,000 people. There are just 600 students that are inside this school. Every time those numbers climb by one life, I mean, you think about the impact that that had inside of a building such as that. And let's not forget again, the innocents here, fourth graders, third graders, we're just 2 days away from finally making it to summer, enjoying time with their friends. And all of a sudden, those dreams have just been dashed in mere moments. And now many are dealing with this nightmare. Our field producer actually just stopped by at the Family Reconnection Center. We're going to try and get that video into you a little bit later today. But to describe it to you, you see these families that have no idea what has happened to their loved one. They are waiting anxiously, hoping for good news, partially expecting the worst. And then when you see other families start to burst into tears and put their heads into the shoulders of some of the other families that they're seeing there, and just the way that the emotion has overcome a community such as this, it's really hard to describe, Ashley. We hear from lawmakers, and you hear the back and forth in Washington, D.C., but there's still just so much that we don't know right now. We still do not know the motives behind this incident. We still don't know how this person got firearms. We still do not know the mental state of this individual. Those are all question marks, and you hear the speculation going back and forth. It's not helpful. The facts that we have now are the latest that we have, and they continue to trickle in moment by moment. Ashley.
Robert Sherman, keep us abreast of everything that you are learning this evening, if you wouldn't mind. I know this is a fluid situation and that things are changing and that details are, you know, trickling in. So thank you for that. Robert Sherman's doing the job for us in Uvalde, Texas. I want to go now live, if I can, to Lieutenant Chris Alvarez, the Texas Department of Public Safety Public Information Officer, who joins me live from there as well. Lieutenant, is there anything more that you can update me? I think I'm hearing now that, unfortunately, his signal isn't ready. We're going to just move on from that, but bring him back when we can. My colleague, Kelly Beeson, is standing by live as well. You have been digging into the background on this murderer, 18 years old. It's hard to understand, Kelly, how much hate someone can have in their heart at that young age. But sadly, we've been seeing this. It's not the first time. I was there for Sandy Hook. That was a 20-year-old that took out that many 6-year-old children and 20 of them, 26-year-old kids and 6 educators there. I didn't think I was going to be covering a story like this again, but here we are. What do you know?
Well, it's absolutely devastating, Ashley. You had a very heartfelt response, as we all have, to this tragedy, senseless tragedy. We learned today that the suspect in this case was a student at Uvalde High School, that he was 18 years old, that he lived in Uvalde and was a U.S. resident. And at a press conference earlier today, officials said they believe the suspect did, in fact, act alone.
Hours after the attack on Robb Elementary in Uvalde, Texas, questions remain about the motive of the suspect in this case, 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, who allegedly killed his grandmother before heading to the school.
The FBI has consistently reported that 75% of school shooters have been bullied at school previously.
Ellen DeLara is a former professor at Syracuse University who says some young people who act out in this way have decided to adopt a radical philosophy. For others, it's a way to deal with past trauma, violence or abuse in their home or their community.
They are people who oftentimes have tried to figure out a solution to what it is that they felt while they were in school, and they felt that no adult helped them.
It could be some time before we learn anything about motive, and it's too early to speculate.
Former FBI agent Phil Andrews says law enforcement officials are now looking to put those pieces of the puzzle together by taking photos of the crime scene, interviewing neighbors, reviewing digital evidence, surveillance videos, and social media, lifting any clue that points to motive or any potential assistance to the suspect.
It's mostly everything is going to be in a journal or it's going to be in social media. But where you'll find it is where they're writing somewhere that are going to absolutely give you the story of why he did this, because it's not something that's so random. He's ruminated about this and processed it to the point where he couldn't take it, and this is where we end up.
And Thomas says by the end of the week, more evidence will likely emerge to potentially clarify what the motive was in this case, Ashley.
Kelly Beeson reporting for us live. Thank you for that. Although I don't know that we'll ever really know a motive for someone who would do this to innocent little children. And then, of course, all of the families connected to those innocent children. I mentioned this name before, and he's with us now, Lieutenant Chris Alvarez with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Lieutenant, thank you for taking time out of your day. I know this is just an overwhelming incident for you and your colleagues to not only live through, but to process. My colleague, Robert Sherman, just updated us on the number of children at 19 now, 19 dead, two teachers dead. Can you update me on any further details, sir?
Right. So Robert Sherman, what he reported earlier, that is correct. That is accurate information. We do have 19 children that are deceased right now. And of course, two adults, two teachers that are deceased. That is the final update that we have at this time. It's still an active investigation. We're still trying to determine any type of clues, any evidence. But it's a multi-agency cooperation in this investigation. We have FBI, ATF, multiple agencies on the state side, local and county working together to try to determine exactly what triggered this incident to take place and also what the motives were.
I know we have a long delay between us, so be patient with me, sir, as I ask you this next question. I covered Sandy Hook, and I was there as those parents were being notified in their reunification center, and it was one of the most heart-wrenching things I've ever been through in 34 years of doing this job. I can only imagine that this is still going on, but can you please let me know, where do things stand with reuniting these parents? Have all parents been told if they're not going to be seeing their children again?
Right, so we are currently working on that right now. We do have our local police departments, counties, as well as also volunteers assisting us with that. And right now they are providing those updates to those families and trying to reach out to those families and locate those families as far as any potential victims. So we are constantly updating that. That is a priority right now, to identify those families as well, try to reunite them with their children, and also to identify those that are deceased right now.
So if I understand you correctly, there are still some families who do not know that their children are in that count of 19 innocent little victims dead. There are still some parents who have not been notified.
Well, that right now I cannot provide that update as far as who has not been notified. Again, that's a separate entity. We do have local law enforcement working with those families. They know the area, they know the families, so they're trying to reach out to those families and identify those victims as well as any potential victims as well. But we will provide updates as we continue. As I mentioned before, this is still an active investigation. There's so much happening right now that we're trying to determine exactly what took place and trying to identify those individuals and reunite those families.
I'm going to ask you a couple of questions all at once, because I know we have such a long delay between us just with our technology here. But I know that you're likely still processing that crime scene. Have you been able to at least get the bodies of the children who were killed out of that school?
Well, we are still currently processing the scene. It is a big scene. There is multiple individuals, especially children, adults, that lost their life in this particular incident. And we want to make sure we conduct a thorough investigation by processing every single piece of evidence that we can gather by working with the FBI, ATF. So as of right now, we're going to continue processing the scene. until we feel at that point that we have obtained as much evidence as possible to make a strong case and have a strong case and put the clues together and determine exactly what took place.
And of course, the murderer in this case is deceased himself. So it's hard to understand, I think, for a lot of lay people, what case would you possibly have to build at this point? But understandably, this is a massive crime scene and there is processing that must be done. Just want to show this picture while we're speaking, sir. This is the killer, the photograph of the killer in this case. 18 years old, having just killed his own grandmother and then engaging in body armor with all of those children and teachers in that school. One last very quick question. There was some discussion from a witness, it was a quick mention and nothing after that, of a girlfriend of the shooter saying that she wanted to finish what he had started. Is there anything to that investigation? Because all I hear, sir, is that he acted alone. Are there any other people being investigated alongside of that lone gunman?
Well, we're not going to rule that out. We're going to, as I mentioned before, we're going to conduct a thorough investigation to make sure that there was no other individuals involved. As far as the identification or the mention of a girlfriend, that has not been confirmed. That is not accurate information. We have not confirmed that. And I know you mentioned earlier as well as how much more can we process with this major crime scene since a suspect is deceased. But we do have to provide some type of closure to these families and try to identify what actually took place by obtaining evidence, looking at social media platforms, the history of this suspect to try to determine exactly what triggered this event.
Lieutenant Alvarez, thank you for taking the time to speak with us and God bless you and your community. Just awful, awful news for him and for his colleagues to have to process tonight. Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy. Now, that's important because Sandy Hook was in Connecticut. He gave an impassioned speech on the floor of the Senate today. And if you didn't see it, you should take a look.
Mr. President, there are 14 kids dead in an elementary school in Texas right now. What are we doing? What are we doing? Just days after a shooter walked into a grocery store to gun down African-American patrons, we have another Sandy Hook on our hands. What are we doing? There have been more mass shootings than days in the year. Our kids are living in fear every single time they set foot in a classroom because they think they're going to be next. What are we doing? Why do you spend all this time running for the United States Senate? Why do you go through all the hassle of getting this job, of putting yourself in a position of authority, if your answer is that as this slaughter increases, as our kids run for their lives, we do nothing? What are we doing? Why are you here? If not to solve a problem as existential as this.
That's Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut. That's my state, so I perked up, not only because he's my senator, but also because that's what happened in my state, Sandy Hook. So this playbook was familiar to me when this started today, which is why I immediately thought of Dave Cullen. Dave Cullen is the author of the book Columbine, which detailed what happened in 1999. And then he wrote the book Parkland, Birth of a Movement, which detailed what happened in 2018. And Dave, I don't know how many times you and I have met. I've honestly lost count in the last 20-some-odd years how many times we have met to discuss this very story. But I didn't think we were going to meet again with more than a dozen little children killed.
I didn't either, in fact. This afternoon, I realized something really stupid. Somewhere in my mind, I had apparently made this mental category of Sandy Hook as this one-of-a-kind thing. And thank God we only had one of those. And this afternoon, it was just like, oh, how stupid was that? What made me think there wouldn't be another one. I couldn't bear the thought, because I couldn't bear the first one. You know, I mean, they're all terrible, but that was the one that was I couldn't even handle it.
You know, when Columbine happened, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have the video game culture that we have today. We didn't have the overstress, overwork, too many sports, too many grades, too many SAT demands, too hard to get into college, all these incredible stresses on kids today. And we didn't deprive them of as much sleep as we deprive them of. And so are you seeing any changes in the behavior, certainly in the numbers? I know we're seeing that. But are you seeing any difference in the kinds of people that young people are targeting, the decisions they're making in a premeditated way to take out the most innocent among us?
No, I haven't been studying that. And to tell you the truth, Ashley, I have actually lost interest in, you know, why they're doing this and studying that. At this point, all I'm working on is like, how are we going to get out of this? And, you know, the FBI has studied to death now the types of people doing, and I don't know if the profile is evolving. But, you know, we cannot allow them to have the access to the guns to do this. It's, you know, that's where my focus is now.
We're not even a couple of hours into this story, and the numbers just keep changing. So I can't even say we're moving on from this, Dave Cullen. We're still breaking. The news is still breaking, and I hope the number doesn't climb. But I said that last hour, and it did. And I say this every time I sign off with you. I hope I don't have a conversation with you again, unless it's something unrelated, Dave.
I do too. And I'm glad you played the Chris Murphy clip, because that's exactly how I'm feeling. You know, an hour ago, I was still in the distraught phase. I've moved into the anger phase right now. And my anger really is so much at them. It's like, what are you doing? What will it take for you people to do something? And the main person I look to for wisdom for this these days is Gabby Giffords. She actually named her organization Giffords Courage, because, and that's really a dig on the politicians, because that's who's lacking the courage. That's all that's like, you know, when 80, 90% of the public is for sensible gun legislation, and these jokers are still doing nothing.
It is hard. Dave Cullen is the author of Columbine. He's the author of Parkland. And I don't know, maybe the author of Uvalde at this point, Rob Elementary. Dave, thank you. Good to see you again.
Thanks, Ashley. Good night.
Good night. And today, if you were watching News Nation, there was a young reporter named Allie Bradley who was on the scene and had some of the very first details firsthand, spoke with witnesses who actually saw the killer actually smashing into the school. Allie Bradley is going to join me next. Allie Bradley is an independent journalist in Uvalde, Texas, who up until today might have been reporting on politics or local events in Uvalde, Texas, and suddenly she was thrust into the national scene because there was a shooting that is a national story, beyond a national story, an international story. Allie joins me live now. Allie, I watched earlier as you did coverage and included firsthand accounts from witnesses that you spoke with on the scene just moments after this attack. Walk me through the things that you learned firsthand from these witnesses today.
Well, actually, Ashley, I've been covering this national crisis down here as an immigration reporter really since August. So this has been kind of my stomping grounds for almost a year now. And so this community and these people that live in this community, I know a lot of people that are out here. And one of my sources actually has a student at this school, which is how I learned about this incident in the first place. And luckily, that student is home safe. I was able to go and meet with the mother just to hug her. I just sat down and hugged her. But the son did want to tell me his story. So he told me a little bit about what he experienced, a third grade boy telling me that they were at recess, that he saw the gunman fire shots, and he said, this man is serious about hurting somebody. And I asked him how he felt about going back to school at some point. He said he did not want to go back to school. He said that he didn't know if he was going to survive this. Now, when it comes to the eyewitnesses, I talked to two separate people that live right next to the school here, and they, within an hour of each other, not related, did not know each other, and had the exact same story, where this black, dark gray pickup truck sped through the neighborhood, and neither of them thought anything of it because this area has seen an uptick of human and drug smuggling pursuits out here. So they thought it was just another pursuit. Well, it was a pursuit because they were following him after he was at his grandmother's house, who we now know who he shot. And that was just about a mile away from where this crash ended. Both of these eyewitnesses tell me that it did not appear that this suspect was targeting the school, more that he was speeding past the car crash, the truck crash right next to the school. They had funeral people in the funeral home right next door. They ran out to see if the man was okay, and that's when shots were firing right then. Then they watched him run across the field, get access into that school, and that, again, is when the shots were fired there. That third grade boy telling me he saw the gunman weaving between the cars, shooting outside as well, and that, again, was when they were at recess. Now, one of the gentlemen that I talked to was actually a classmate of this shooter. He actually went to school with him. He was in class with him 2 years ago. I asked him if there was any indication that this is something that they would have thought that this shooter was capable of, and he said no. He said he didn't identify anything that was sketchy. Nothing would have shown them that this was something that this man was capable of. Now, he said that he has not seen him at the school for 2 years. He believes he dropped out of school because, again, this is a small school. These are small communities, and he had not seen this man since then. He said he was wildly different in looks. He looked completely different than when he saw him 2 years ago in school. But again, this is not something that they ever thought they would see in this community. It's something you hear in these small towns. And he said it's hard because he went to that elementary school. He knows the teachers there. This young 18-year-old man who's a senior right now, he knows these people that go to this school. Now, again, I first was really tipped off about this, if you will, because one of my sources had a student there. And it's by the grace of God that he's safe. And really, all of this response was in part so quick because they were all down here, because this has been an ongoing crisis for illegal immigration across the Del Rio sector, which Uvalde County is part of that, or in Uvalde is part of that.
Incredible details, just incredible details that you were able to get, Allie, especially with that third grader, because they are the other victims in all of this. The ones who survived, who will never be the same because of what they have lived through, a war zone at the ripe young age of about 9, 10, or 11 years old, not even. Allie Bradley, excellent work today, and thank you for relaying those details to us. Appreciate it. I'm going to take a quick break, but when we come back, you have got to wait for this. The governor of Connecticut, back during Sandy Hook, made a decision, and it was an enormous decision. He chose to be the person who notified the families of the Sandy Hook killer that they were not going to see their kids again. He himself did it. And he is joining me next to tell me what it was like to go through that and what the people in Uvalde are likely going through right now. That's next. We're just getting some video into News Nation that I want to share with you, and this is extraordinarily difficult. It is the Sergeant Willie DeLeon Civic Center, which, if you've been watching the story, you might know is the headquarters now for this tragedy, where families have gathered waiting for word, waiting to find out if they will be reunited with their children. All of these families waiting. Waiting and hoping to hell it's not going to be the word that some families are certain to receive in the next hours. Again, that's the Sergeant Willie DeLeon Civic Center in Uvalde, Texas. It is frightfully reminiscent of the Sandy Hook Elementary process that the parents went through. They too gathered at a central location away from Sandy Hook Elementary School. And for hours and hours, they too were wondering if they would have the horrible news that they'd lost their children. The governor of Connecticut at the time was Dan Malloy, and he decided that it should be his job to make those notifications known, to face those families and let them know that indeed they had lost their kids, and he is live with me now. Governor, thank you so much for being here tonight, and I am so sorry that we are meeting on this occasion, but I can only assume that you heard this news, and it was a terrible flashback for you because you know full well what those families are going through and those politicians in Texas.
Yeah, it, Very reminiscent of what happened at Sandy Hook. The initial message was, you know, one or two people killed, which generally, and I was used to be a prosecutor in New York City, and what that normally meant was that it was a domestic. And then, of course, within a very short period of time, we came to understand that there was a much larger shooting at the school, and got in a car and drove down to that beautiful bucolic community and got to the firehouse, which is where all of the folks who hadn't been reunited were, and lots of other people around. And then the wait began. And as you've mentioned, police protocols, you know, are such that you don't confirm a death until you have an identification made. And we didn't have identifications made because we didn't have someone to do it. And we tried to think about how to do it. And then ultimately, it just dragged on too long and made the decision that it was unfair to these families to be waiting for a confirmation that might not come for another 10 or 11 hours. And ultimately, we the troopers and the police didn't want to do that because that broke their protocols. And so, as you mentioned, I made the decision to do it.
Governor Malloy, after Sandy Hook, we all said the same thing, never again. It will never, ever happen again. This can't happen again. There has to be some kind of change in this country. Regardless of how anyone watching feels about gun control, there had to be something to prevent this from ever happening again. And this is year 10 since Sandy Hook. It is a decade since Sandy Hook, and still nothing. December. Is President Biden up for this? Is the president going to be able to do anything about it? Is anyone going to be able to do anything about this?
You know, a couple of quick things. 2 days after the shooting on Sunday show, somebody interviewed me, and I just warned everyone that this was going to come to your community. This was going to happen in your movie theater or your play theater or your school or your mall. I'm not prophetic, except when it comes to predicting doom. And of course, in the 10 years that you're talking about since that December shooting almost 10 years ago, we've seen this play out time and time and time again, despite the efforts of individuals to try to make us safer. I mean, one of the questions I had, did he shoot glass doors in? You know, one of the things that we did in the wake of the shooting at Sandy Hook was to say that all glass had to be reinforced, had to have a metal reinforcement if it was an entrance. You know, I don't know whether anyone read that report, but in Connecticut we did, and we required reinforced glass at all entrances. You know, there are simple things we can do to make ourselves safer, and then there's very complicated issues that people get all worked up about, but there are ways to make ourselves safer. One of those, by the way, is to get people with mental health challenges the treatment that they need and deserve. And there are lots of states who are denying that to needlessly. And I don't know what the laws are in Texas, but there are a number of states who just have not expanded Medicare to allow for that treatment to happen. I mean, let's treat sick people. How about that?
And this man was entirely sick at 18 years old, beyond sick. Former Governor of Connecticut, Dan Malloy, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to do this for us tonight. I really appreciate it. And again, I'm sorry we're meeting under these circumstances.
Keep up your good work.
Thank you. I want to bring in now Scarlett Lewis. Scarlett lost her son, Jesse, in the Sandy Hook massacre. Jesse was only 6 years old, but somehow had the wherewithal to scream and yell that the children should run for cover while the shooter was reloading. And those kids survived. Nine of them survived because of Jesse's heroics at age six. Scarlett Lewis is his mom, and Dr. Steven Seeger is a psychiatrist who joins me as well. Scarlett, thank you for summoning the courage to talk to me tonight, because on a day like this, I just can't imagine what you are going through, feeling like here we go again.
I've been exactly where those parents are, and it's devastating. You don't know if you're going to survive.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts or advice? Not that they're going to hear it now, but at some point they're going to need it, on how to navigate not just the next hours and days, but the next decade, because that's where you are.
I am. I'm 10 years down the road, and my advice to them is to know that you're not alone. The country grieves for you, and there will be meaning found in their loss, because we are going to be keeping our kids safe. We're going to be safeguarding their mental health and well-being. And I have hope, believe it or not, there are things that we can do, and we will be honoring those lives collectively.
Well, and I want to reiterate that your son, Jesse, at the young age of 6, somehow was able to have the knowledge and the ability to become a hero in such a calamity and save the lives of other children. Dr. Seeger, those other children, we heard from Allie Bradley earlier that there were all these children out at recess who saw this. There were children in the classrooms who saw this. These are children who are going to be survivors. What are they going to have to cope with? What are their lives going to be like?
Well, it's PTSD, and it happens to kids. It can happen to anybody. Anyone who witnesses this horror is going to have to relive it. They're going to have help. They're going to have nurturing. And you can imagine, put yourself in that seat, in that school, and you're 6 or you're 7. I have kids that age. Can you imagine? And so they're going to need tons of intervention therapy, you know, support groups, that kind of thing for these kids to, they'll have it all their lives. I'm sure if you ask all the kids who are at Sandy Hook who survived, you'll never forget it, but they can get through it. But it's going to require a concerted effort on the part of the whole community to support these kids who are actually there and saw this.
And like, you know, Sandy Hook, Uvalde is a small community, and they will have to come together as well. Scarlett Lewis and Dr. Steven Seeger, thank you both. And again, I keep repeating this. I say it all the time. I'm so sad that I say it all the time, but I'm sad we've met under these circumstances, and I appreciate your wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Coming up after the break, there is a big question looming over all of this. Even as the numbers keep changing, even as the banner on your screen right now may not be final, we may not be at 19 children, we may be at 20, we may be at more adults killed, there are still people injured. And the big looming question is, how will this affect us? Will this affect anything? Politics matter, and this is a political year. Believe it or not, it's a political night. So will this have any effect? That's next.
I'm Mike Vaccaro.
I mentioned, just going to break, that this, in fact, is primary election night, the 6th primary election night so far this season. And while we would normally be knee-deep in vote counts and graphics and pundits, this is, you know, not the time, but I do want you to go to bed informed on the biggest contests, because they do matter, especially with issues like you're seeing tonight on the news. In Georgia, incumbent GOP Governor Brian Kemp has easily defeated his primary challenger, who was backed by Donald Trump. With the votes still being tallied, Kemp is running 3-1 ahead of former Georgia Senator David Perdue. Trump's pick in Georgia for the GOP Senate primary, former NFL star Herschel Walker, he simply trounced his opposition for the right to face off against the Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock in November. In Alabama, Republican Katie Britt is running well ahead of Congressman Mo Brooks in that state's GOP primary for Senate. Brooks was endorsed by Donald Trump and then was unendorsed by Donald Trump because he said we needed to move on from the election fraud issue. In Arkansas, Sarah Huckabee Sanders easily won the Republican nomination for governor. That is an office, yes, that her father once held. And in Texas, the sitting attorney general, Republican Ken Paxton, dominated a runoff election against George P. Bush, the grandson of President Bush 41. The voters do not seem the least bit bothered by the fact that the Texas's highest ranking law enforcement official has been under indictment for securities fraud for 7 years. Mark McKinnon is a former advisor to George W. Bush and also John McCain. He's also host of The Circus on Showtime. He joins me now live. I thought we'd spend the whole night talking about these results, and we're not. We're talking about something entirely different. But I will ask you this, Mark. I thought we were going to go into this election and we would never hear the words abortion or gun control. And now I wonder if all we're going to hear going into this election is abortion and gun control.
Absolutely right. You know, this is why politics matters. And as you said, this is, both of these issues have intruded in a way that are dominating your news coverage tonight and will for the foreseeable future. This is just a sad fact that that we have to repeatedly deal with these crises that are so avoidable. I mean, if you want to see, we have parallels around the world, Ashley. We saw in Scotland in 1996 a mass shooting where 18 school children were killed. They changed their gun laws, and since then they have had zero mass school shootings. And in this year, we've had more mass shootings and school shootings than there are numbers of days in the year. So this is not complicated in terms of things that we can do. We know, for example, there are simple things that we can do like universal background checks. And that's something, by the way, that Donald Trump was inclined to do until the NRA lobby weighed in on him, as you recall, after the Florida shootings. And so that I've never seen a public policy issue, actually, in my entire career of politics in which public opinion is so divorced from the reality of what's going on in public policy. Because I'm with an organization called 90 on the board of an organization called 97%, which represents gun owners and gun owners who are looking toward making gun safety measures more available around the United States. And among gun owners, 86% support background checks. That's not everybody. That's gun owners. And by the way, that number is more than 80% among Republicans. So the fact that we have more than 80% of Republicans who support background checks and can't pass legislation that supports that mandate is shocking and it's indefensible.
Mark McKinnon is the host of Showtime's The Circus, and you're right. There are plenty of Republicans who are for common sense reform when it comes to gun legislation. It is just mystifying how we just can't get there as a country. Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much for doing this for us tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you for being there, Ashley.
I told you before, I'm going to tell you again, the count on the bottom of your screen is 19 children dead, 2 teachers dead, and I don't know if that count is going to change, but we are live in Texas after this.